What was that? Yeah.
See if we got enough chalk for that. That's not important.
Oh,
well, somebody's get all chalk. Yeah. It's one way to do it.
Sounds like what Adam and Eve would have said after. Okay. There'll be 25 words on the test here, so some of these are going to be in English. If I put it down in English, you give it to me in Greek and vice versa. Now, on the nouns, be sure to include the article. On the adjectives, be sure to include the two the endings for the feminine and the neuter. In other words, you want dictionary form. And they'll be worth 4 points each. 1 point off for every letter wrong and a reading mark for the endings, and 2 points for the article and nouns. Okay? So go ahead and take out a blank sheet of paper and get started here. What's that?
Number 7.
Oh,
skipped a bit there.
Huh.
Thank you. She missed number 7.
What's the deal?
This one on the whole tab.
Okay. Okay, let's go ahead and exchange papers then. Make sure your name's on it. Okay, the scoring is 4 points per word and total of 100 points for 25. Now, on the ones that you, I've given you the Greek and you can translate it in English, it's really not much. It's either usually 4 or 0. And the other ones, though, on the where you're having to put down the Greek, every greeting mark counts 1 point. Every letter counts a point as far as a mistake is concerned, but you can't miss any more than 4. And don't worry about the accents. Although, if all the accents are correct, by the time you get done, add +2 to the full paper. Oh, adjective endings, yeah, they're worth 1. Yeah, they're worth 1 point each for those endings in the adjectives. Okay. That's what you call Murphy's Law. Number one, then, parable. I guess I'll just erase this and put the proper forms up here. Save some space. It should be hey parable way. And accent on the last syllable if you're watching for the accents there. Okay, protos, eta on means what?
First.
Yeah, I'll only bother to write those in. First, okay. Blessed is Makarios. Peso. Pursue should be Dioko. Delta, Iota, Omega, Kappa, Omega. Hey to me should be honor. Hey, Basilisa is queen. One's own is idios. Someone was asking about the word idiot. There's the word idiot comes from idiotes,
which is, but I'm not sure in the Greek whether there's a connection of those words or not. There is a separate word in Greek, idiotes. Okay. Voice is heiphone. Keruso means to preach. Heteros means other or different, if you wanted to put that down, other or different. Last should be eschatos, epsilon sigma, chi, alpha tau, over sigma, with beta, own. Hege should be earth or land. Algo is to lead. Tongue should be hey glossa. Oops, it's a little thing. Sorry about that. Can't get me now, I've already taken all my tests. Okay. Hey thalassa is sea, S-E-A. Like ocean and so forth. Kalos is good or beautiful. Good or beautiful. Right is grapho, gamma rho, alpha, phi, omega. Tree is todendron, delta, epsilon, nu, delta, rho, omega, nu. And if you're watching for the accents, be sure there's a grave on the toe, because it comes before that particular article that's with the accent. Okay, hey, hemera is day. Open should be anoigo, alpha, nu, omicron, iota, gamma, omega. And to ergon is work. Hour should be hey, hora. Omega with rough breathing, rho, alpha.
Actually.
Yes, oops,
omega.
Yeah. And then kalupto should be hide. Hide. Question? Yes, points should be 1 point off for every letter wrong on a Greek one. 1 point for a breathing mark, 1 point for an ending on an adjective. You know, there should be two endings on each adjective, except for, well, we don't have ionios on this one. And 2 points for the article. If the article is wrong on a noun, that's worth 2 points. Okay? Then you could take a look and see if they got the accents right on all the Greek forms, add 2 points to the total. So it's possible to get 102. Yes?
Okay, the mirror for an hour. Should that be just two or four?
Oh, yeah, that's the wrong word. Yeah, we'll have to just say four.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 1 point for each ending on the adjectives. Not for each letter, but for just for each ending. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, score them and pass them back to the owner. Take a look at your paper, make sure it's correct, and then pass it to the front. Thank you.
Okay, what I want to do today is finish up this discussion of verbs in preparation for the quiz next Wednesday on these verb forms. And we were looking at second aorist yesterday, and it given one example, they called. I want to give one more example and then mention the complications and so forth. And then we'll have our verbs finished as far as we've done so far anyway. Okay, we had the paradigm for lapo, and the essential feature is that on these second aorists we're seeing the augment plus a base change, stem change of some sort, plus the imperfect endings. So let's take another one that's a little bit different, Jurisco. A little bit more radical change in it. The paradigm for Jurisco looks like this. We have your own, your end, your at with an optional new. That should be your s, excuse me. Slipped a line there. And, your omen. And your attack. And your omen. Okay. Same situation here. We've got our ending systems, the same imperfect endings we've seen before. And we have a base change here, and we have the augment. But in the case of a word, the epsilon upsilon, the augment may not change at all. So in this case, we do have the augment, but it's no change because of the epsilon upsilon plus stem cure as a base change. So that's about we've lost the whole syllable off the base. The isk is gone. And then plus the imperfect endings. So this will give you two typical examples of second aorist with that lapo and with this one. You can kind of see what will happen. And this is about as bad as they get as far as stem changes are concerned.
Is that a smooth or rough reading on your
report? It's rough reading, I'm sorry. Yeah, it should be rough reading on all of those. Okay, now notice too that the stem is the same all the way through the whole paradigm. The only difference will be accent shift because of the different numbers of syllables in some of the endings. Okay, complications on the second aorist. First complication is the second aorist must be memorized. There's no clear pattern. So that's about as bad a complication as you can get, I guess. There's no pattern, so you have to memorize it. And maybe an additional note is that the difference between first and second aorists, the only really fundamental difference is the ending system. That's the way you tell a first aorist from a second aorist, so especially by recognition if you don't know what the stem was. You see, some first aorists are also irregular, so a stem change alone is not going to be... going to be the critical thing for deciding first or second aorist, because we've seen some irregular first aorists that had stem changes too. But in the second aorist you have a stem change and a different ending system, and the ending system of course is the thing that's going to be your primary key. Now when it comes to deciding between a second aorist and an imperfect, since the endings now are the same on those forms, the difference there is going to be the stem change. Okay, now you must know the present base, of course, to tell between the imperfect and the second aorist, because the endings are the same, you've got to know the present base. You need to know not only what the stem change was, but you need to know what it was before it was changed. So you can tell between your imperfect form, which is going to be built on the present base,
in a very regular fashion, and the second aorist, which will be built on a stem change with the same endings as the imperfect. Since the endings are the same, you've got to know what the bases were so you can know the difference between the two forms, otherwise you'd be confused. Okay? Yes?
Is that a movable new on the last word?
No, not on this one. No, on this, both of these forms, it's not movable. Only on this form here, third person singular. Okay? Aspect, as far as aorist is concerned, in general, now for the whole aorist category, the aspect is indefinite aspect. So it's indefinite, it's definitely a past tense, actions in the past, but it's indefinite aspect. So one more point to note to the whole thing, indefinite aspect for the aorist. Okay, do we have any questions on these paradigms for the verb forms or what's going to be expected of you on that test? So for the test on Wednesday, well, maybe you take a little bit more discussion of this on Tuesday, but for the test on Wednesday, you'll need to know the verbs that you had to know for this vocab quiz, some 12 verbs. All of those are going to either be regular or follow a pretty good pattern as far as, you know, some of them are going to take the phonological changes on sigmas and so forth. Then on page 78, was it? 78, 79, somewhere there. Yeah, 78. You have some irregular first aorists, the last three of that first five list there, ferro, crino, and meno, and then five second aorists, lepo, ago, urisco, echo, and hamartano. Those are the ones you'll be responsible for. So what is that? You got 8 there and 12 there. You got 20 verbs total that you need to be responsible for the forms. And the test will be basically like a vocabulary test. What I'll just be giving you is a verb form in a particular, you know, detailed form. You know, if I give you I will baptize or something like this, I might give you the English I will baptize and expect you to tell me that, you know, it should be baptizo. In other words, then you'll have to write down the form of the verb. You'll need to know the root form of the verb. You'll need to know I will baptize that it's future, and be able to put it down future first person singular form. And then on the reverse, I'll give you a Greek verb form and after you give me the English translation, which means you'll need to know what the verb means, the meaning of the verb, and then be able to pick out the endings and so forth, what's happened. Okay, so that'll be Wednesday. Yes?
At least I just looked up these three irregular first aorists.
Mm-hmm.
They're also irregular in the future tense.
Don't worry about the future on those first aorist ones. Do be concerned about the second aorist ones, though, where they give you the future here.
Right.
Yeah, these others are going to see ferro, crino, and meno. You can pretty much predict they're going to be irregular in the future, too, because of the sigma problem. But don't worry about that. At least, I mean, you can go ahead and learn them, but I can let you know that I won't have any questions on that on the test. So there's a little bit of mercy there for you. Okay. Any other questions? All right, what I'd like to do today for a little bit, in the time that we have, is do some exercises on the board here. And what I'll do, maybe I'll let you take a crack at it first, or you can just use scratch paper or something here. We're gonna do some translating some sentences from English to Greek and go through the thinking processes that are necessary to do such a translation, try to give you some aid as far as really getting the hang of doing this. So let's consider this sentence. The righteous brother will send the beloved apostle to the wicked disciples. Okay? The righteous brother will send the beloved apostle to the wicked disciples. The righteous brother will send the beloved apostles to the wicked disciples. Okay, let's do a little bit of thinking about this before we start charging into it. First of all, what we want to do is decide what is what in the sentence. So what's the subject of the sentence? Yeah, righteous brother. Okay, and we have an adjective modifying that subject. Then what's the direct object? Beloved disciples. Or beloved apostle, excuse me. Beloved apostle. And then the indirect object. Yes, the wicked disciples. So, case-wise, we're going to have nominative case for beloved righteous brother.
We're going to have accusative case for beloved apostle, and we're going to have dative case for wicked disciples. And word order isn't all that important here, except for, you know, relationship between adjectives and nouns and so forth. So we'll just basically follow English word order here just for fun, to get started anyway. So how would I say righteous brother in the nominative case? The righteous brother. Okay, ho, dikaios, adelphos. Okay. I'm going to put a grave on here because I'm going to have another word coming afterwards. I'm not really going to worry too much about these accents here. But okay, ho dikaios adelphos. Now what we want is a verb form, to send, and it says it will send. So what, first of all, what's the verb to send, the dictionary form? Tempo. All right, and I want to have a third person future, third person singular future form. Because it's the righteous brother, third person, so I want to say he will send. Okay? Pemse. Yes, pemse. Okay, good. And what we needed to do then, pempo is a stem that ends in a P, so you put a sigma on that, becomes C. And then you're going to put your appropriate ending on. Pemse. Okay. Okay, so there's a verb form. Pemse, the beloved apostle. What's that going to look like? Ton agape ton poskalon. Right. Omicron news. Accusative case now. This is our direct object. Ton agape ton apostolon. Oops. Yes. That's right. Okay. Ton agape ton apostolon. Apostolon. And then to the wicked disciples. I'm going to say that. Toys. Use plurals for this. Did you get plurals? Yeah. Okay. Toys. Plurals. Mate tais. Then is first declension masculine noun. So toys. Plurals. Mate tais. Okay. Very simple. Now you can adjust that word order around. You know, you could put tois ponerois, mate tais, pemse, ho dikaios, adelphos, ton agape, ton apostolon, and so forth. You could also, I've chosen to use first attributive positions here, just as easily use second attributive positions. You could say ho adelphos, ho dikaios, and ton apostolon, ton agape, ton, etc. So there's a number of options that are possible here, and if on a test I would give you credit for any of those that were valid. And it's largely a matter of emphasis and so forth. It's going to dictate exactly how you render it.
Mine?
Yes.
When a Greek person is, say, writing a composition or something, and they go to write it, do they necessarily, when they're going to structure their sentence, do they think, well, the main point I want to get across is they're being sent, or the, you know, the wicked disciples, and so they put that first, or?
I think that's essentially what's happening. We do that all the time in English, too, at least in our speaking. We put intonation shifts on things that we want to really emphasize. I don't know if we stop and think so much in a very conscious way, exactly where am I going to put the emphasis. We're feeling something. And because we feel something, we express it in ways that are customary to us, that we may not even stop and analyze before we do it. And I think the person who's writing Greek is doing the same thing. He's not really all that concerned about word order. He's just saying what he feels. And the way he feels it is going to dictate how it comes out. And so if he feels to put an emphasis on wicked disciples here, that will most likely be the first thing he writes down.
because that's the thing that's really given, you know, the thing he really wants to stress.
Mm-hmm. Okay. See, because remember, we're going from English to Greek in this case, and we have a certain English word order pattern that we're used to. So we often will translate according to that English word order pattern. But remember, the Greek doesn't have a word order pattern that he's used to. He doesn't have a certain preferred word order pattern. What he's got is a variable word order situation in which the word order is determined by the way he wants to express himself. And if you go through and read the New Testament, it's the word order pattern that we have in English, subject, verb, direct object, indirect object, that type of thing, or indirect object, direct object, depending on the kind of structure, is, you know, if you took a poll of all the Greek sentences in the New Testament and how many of them fit that as opposed to another, that wouldn't be any more special than any other word order. In other words, you're liable to see almost anything first in a Greek sentence. Okay, and you'll become abundantly aware of that as we get into translation. All right? Any other questions on this one? Take a few more here.
I wonder about that phrase,
brother. Oh, yes. Well, we just have, the trouble is we're having to make up sentences with vocabulary that we have. So, you know, take all these the meanings of the little grain of salt.
That's such a
progress. Yes. Now, either that or sacrificing a beloved prophet. All right? Number two. Okay, let's consider this one. The beloved disciples were persuading the wicked men of the evil church. The beloved disciples were persuading the wicked men of the evil church. The beloved disciples were persuading the wicked men of the evil church. Okay, let's do a little bit of analysis on that first of all. Subject is what? Beloved disciples, right. And the verb form, we're persuading. What tense idea and aspect idea do you want in Greek to convey that? We're persuading. Okay, we've got one vote for aorist. Huh? Okay, yes, we've got a past, all right. So if it's past tense, it's going to be either aorist or imperfect. But it says we're persuading. So we want that's a progressive action, so we want to use the imperfect on that. So use an imperfect, and that, I think I mentioned this to you the other day. On a test like this, I'm going to make it real clear, both English, you know, in the English. If I'm asking you to give me a Greek form, if I put something like "we're persuading," I'll expect you to have an imperfect form. And if I want you to give me an aorist form, I would just say persuaded or something. Just keep it as simple as possible, and that's to convey to you. In other words, unless you see very definitely from what I write a progressive aspect there, use aorist if it's past. So use aorist for anything that's not progressive, okay? Now, and then when you go to English from a Greek form, if I give you an imperfect form, be sure your English translation includes a progressive idea. If I give you an aorist form, then you have a little bit more latitude. Just write down a simple past. That'd probably be the best convention I can adopt, so it will always, you know, be consistent, and I'll know that you understood it was an aorist form. Okay, so we want an imperfect verb form. And then the wicked men of the evil church. Okay, well, the wicked men is going to be our direct object. What would we do with the phrase of the evil church? How's that going to come across in Greek? Yes, yeah, genitive phrase. Okay, so it's qualifying, modifying what kind of wicked men? The wicked men of the evil church. And we don't have to put a preposition of in Greek. All we need to do is put this in the genitive case. Okay, well, let's go ahead and write it down then. The beloved disciples, what's that going to look like?
Hoi.
That's a good one. Nominative. Okay. Hoi. That should be in the second. Okay. Hoi agape toi. Okay. Mathetai. Okay, now we've got a verb form here. We don't really have to take this next, but let's go ahead. We're persuading. Okay, first of all, we've already decided we need an imperfect form. What person and number do we need?
Third person
plural. Third person plural. Beloved disciples. So, third person plural. So, what's the verb to persuade? Patho. Okay, so we want to make patho into an imperfect form, third person. Third person plural, what's it going to look like? Okay, we need our augment first to indicate that past tense. Put our stem down, faith,
And what's the ending for third person? Homo credo. Right. Which is also the same ending as first person singular, but the there'll be no confusion there. Epithon. Okay? So, hoi matetai, hoi agape toi matetai, epithon, the wicked men is the direct object now. What's that going to look like in Greek? Yes. Okay? Tous. Pone rus. And actually, I could stop here if I wanted to. Just tous pone rus, that would be the wicked men. But, or you could say, in other words, treating this as a substantive. The wicked ones, but let's go ahead and put men down here just for the exercise. Anthropos. Okay. Just pone rus, anthropos, and then I want to say of the evil church. So I need, we've talked about genitive, haven't put that in genitive now. So how am I going to write that?
Two.
Okay. Case. Now, here's an option. I could put a tous tes. In other words, I could repeat. See, this genitive phrase can occur in any of the four positions that we're used to seeing adjectives in. So I could have stuck this whole thing out in front. I could have said tes poneras ecclesias out front of tous poneros anthropos. Or I could put it following here in the fourth position, the second predicate position, and that's the most common position. That's what I'm going to use here. But I could also put it in the second attributive position, which would mean I would repeat this article tous and then write tes again. I could say tus tes pone ras ecclesias, or just tes pone ras ecclesias. That's where you'll see it most commonly, so that's why we'll put it down here. Tes pone ras ecclesias. Okay, good. So, hoi agape toi matetai epithon tus poneros anthropos tes poneras ecclesias. Yes, Tony?
Could you tell me again why we have third person plural for the verb form?
Because the subject.
Third person
pronoun. The subject is a stated thing. The disciples. So disciples. In other words, the disciples, they did something. They is third person plural. See? So in other words, anytime you've got a stated subject like that, see, first person can be I, second person can be you. Those will always be pronominal ideas. In other words, you'll see them pronouns. Anytime you see a stated subject like this, that's not a pronoun, it's pretty much going to have to be a third person form. So then you have to decide whether it's singular or plural. Okay? In other words, the way to help you out is take the noun out and put a pronoun in there and in its place, and you'll know what it had to be. In other words, if it's the beloved disciples we're persuading, if you take out beloved disciples and substitute a pronoun, you'd have to say they were persuading. And so now the they, that maybe you could associate that with third person plural. Okay, anyone else? Don't hesitate. Well, the reason we're doing this is so that we can kind of go through every facet of the reasoning process here in doing these translations. So if there's anything that you don't understand why we did it that way, be sure and speak up. Now again, word order is variable, and you've got several units here. Let's say we've got this unit here, we've got this unit for the verb, this whole thing here, then this unit for the verb, then we've got this unit down here, and we've got this unit here. You know, all these are your elements, you might say. So this is my subject. This is my verb. This is my direct object. This is a genitive phrase.
Why were you going to put the tus in front of the tes?
Oh, over here?
To show.
Yeah, well, that would have made this whole phrase in the second attributive position rather than in the second predicate position. And, you know, it's just a matter of preference.
Since you already had an adjective in the first attribute, would that preclude also stuff?
No, you don't. You'll sometimes see some adjectives, and in fact, they'll often do something like this just that way. If you've got a genitive phrase you want to stick in there, and you had other adjectives, they'll probably load the adjectives up on one side and load the genitive phrase up on the other side. Get it, make it balanced, I don't know.
So, tus pone rus, tes pone ras, ecclesias, anthropos, which is, you know, like that.
Oh, I see. Sticking this thing in between there, that's probably not as likely to see. That gets a little bit encumbering. When you stick both of these things on the same side and so forth, that can get a little bit confusing, because what happens then is there can be a question about this being a substantive and the genitive phrase modifying this rather than the next noun and so forth. So you'll generally see the adjectives maybe loaded up on the front side and then the genitive phrase. That's part of the reason I think that the fourth second predicate position is most common for genitive phrases. Just so you don't get confusion as to what the genitive phrase is stuck to. Most of the time it won't be a problem anyway, but it's, you know, there are instances in which there can be ambiguities because of the fact that an adjective can be used as a substantive, and now there can be, could potentially be a problem as to what that genitive phrase is modifying. Okay.
The Greeks were Englishmen at heart, they.
Well, once in a while, they did break down the word order at times. You know, you can see that. It was probably real. We probably derived some of our word order and our thinking processes from the Greek language. Okay, any other questions here? But these major units can be variable in word order. This last one here, though, does have to have a certain relationship to what it's modifying. So it's got some rules of tying it to this. So it can't just be anywhere. The genitive phrase can't be anywhere in the sentence. It's got to be in some proximity to this phrase here, so we know it's modifying it. In other words, in one of those four positions. And then within each of these units, there can be some variations here. We've got two possible positions for an attributive adjective. So we could have tous pone rous, anthropous like this, or we could have tous anthropous, tous pone rous. And then you might say tous taste pone rousically. So that'll, you know, you could do that too. Yes? Oh yes, right. In other words, when you're talking about how to apply this to this, yes, this whole phrase is treated as if it's an adjective. Okay. And this whole phrase, just kind of put a big bracket around it in your mind, and you can stick the article tus out here in front of this whole thing, and this tus applies to this whole unit, if you want to put it in attributive position. Yeah, that would, see, if I stick a tus in here, now we've got a second attributive position of this whole phrase with reference to this anthropos. Right. Yes?
On the first question, you also have the verb in the third person. Is that because it would come out to he?
Right, exactly. Yeah, the righteous brother he supported did this. Right. Okay. All right. Here's another one. I don't know if we'll have time. Well, the bell's just about to ring. Well, you can write this down. We'll write this down and we'll do it tomorrow, maybe, or next time. I want to do a few more of these before the test so we can get a better familiarity with what, you know, it's one thing to learn verb forms in a paradigm, but it's another thing to learn what they mean and how they fit into a sentence, you know. You can learn lots of paradigms and get them real good, but you won't know what to do with them once you've got them. Okay? So here's another sentence. God opened the Holy Word to the eternal churches. God opened the Holy Word to the eternal churches. God opened the Holy Word to the eternal churches. Okay, we can maybe do a little talking about that. We won't write the Greek down. We're almost out of time here. But God would be your subject. Opened, what's the verb to open? Anoigo. Okay, now what tense and aspect do we want? Okay, well, third person singular, that would be the person number and so forth. What? Yeah, what aspect? Okay, since I've left it pretty much indefinite here, and there's no progressive action being shown, we'll go ahead and use an aorist. Now, in other words, if I said, on the other hand, God was opening the Holy Word, then you'd want to use an imperfect. But since I just said God opened, go ahead and use an aorist for that. Okay? And so we're going to want an aorist third-person singular form for the word verb anoigo. Okay, well, we'll look at that a little bit more and get some more practice with that next time. Right, indefinite. Mm-hmm. Okay, do we have all the papers?
Was open would be progressive. Was open would be. Well, was opened? Yeah, that would be different.
Was
huh? Yeah, has opened or was opened. There you're getting more into what could be either an aorist or a perfect, most likely a perfect. An actual perfect form we haven't had yet. Yes, was opening would be your progressive aspect. Right, yeah, not was open, but was opening. Yes, or customarily, or he used to open, something like that. Yeah. Well, that's subjunctive. Yeah.
Every now and then, open. So I always said the word was open, that would even be a passive.
No, if it's the word was open, that would now you're talking about a passive form. That's a passive verb form. Okay.
So and then the two idea would be taken care of by a and two would be taken care of with the accusative.
Yes,
right.
To the possibility
Oh, okay.